Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Aaron Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian, and our guest today is Rishi Mahesh. He is an actor and writer from Canton, Michigan, who currently lives in Los Angeles, California. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter at Rishi Puff, or subscribe to his newsletter at rishimahesh.substack.com. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Oh, I keep forgetting to do this as part of our intro. What are you reading these days, if anything?
What am I reading these days? I am, honestly, I feel like it's really annoying. I have a lot of like craft books, like Actor Prepares. I'm reading like a book on directing. I have a book on like voice and speech for performance, like from college that I'm tapping back into. But also this, like reread last lecture for our podcast. And the next book that I have to read is Tennis and Relaxation, which is a book that was written by my old tennis coach growing up. He was like a huge role model for me, and he just published a book. So I have to read his book and then get back to him about it. But that's next up. Yeah.
But that feels like such a perfect companion to this book.
Yes, it really is.
So today's book is The Last Lecture from 2008 by Randy Pausch. I had never heard of this book before. Since you decided on this one, I've been wanting to know, how did this book come into your life? Like, how is this a childhood book? Tell me about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Actually, let me say this first. The Last Lecture is written by a computer scientist named Randy Pausch, who's from Baltimore, Maryland, which I'm from Maryland, not from Baltimore, but still neat, who has, in 2008, has pancreatic cancer and knows he's about to die and is invited by Carnegie Mellon to give a lecture about sort of, it's a lecture series about like, you know, the biggest takeaways from your career. And he uses it as sort of like a farewell to life and a lasting lesson to his kids who are too young to really know him. So how did this come into your life? What's your story with
Yeah.
It?
Yeah. So, I mean, how it came into my life was, I remember I was like 10 or 11 years old or something. And I was in the back of my uncle's car on like a long trip somewhere, and it was just like sitting in his back seat, and I had nothing to do, so I like picked it up and was reading it. And yeah, it's a memoir, like it's a memoir for like, you know, that I think was popular, yeah, in like the 2000s. Yeah, and I read it when I was like 10 or 11, and obviously it's mature on some level. It's, yeah, like this memoir, and it's about like this guy who was like dying of cancer, and it's just all of his lessons for life. And as a 10 or 11 year old, I found it compelling, and I ended up just like rereading it a bunch over the course of like middle school, you know, which was odd, obviously, to be getting all of this, like, this book written by and for people who are much older than me. But I thought of it as a kind of roadmap to life and like adulthood or something when I was like a preteen. So yeah, that's how I came across it.
I love that. And I think like, even though you were perhaps not like the target audience of like the published book, it feels like you were the target audience of the lecture nonetheless, because this is a guy writing for his kids about sort of how he made his childhood dreams happen, which I thought was like, as soon as I got to that part in like the second or third page, I was like, this is really perfect for this show. And I think it came out in 2008, and I was thinking about this earlier. 2008 is like the Obama election and things like that. I was starting middle school that year. And I was trying to think about childhood dreams, which I think we should definitely talk about next. And I was like, I don't think any of my dreams really, like, I didn't have dreams until middle school, really. That was like the age where you start understanding that the world exists and that you are within it. So like, I want to ask about like, what would your last lecture include? But to start, like, what are some of those childhood dreams? Because did I have any? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my childhood dreams were all, I remember mine really vividly. They were all like career oriented, I think, because that's just like how I was raised. Like, my parents were definitely like talking to us about like career and stuff from a very young age. And that was part of, even when I read this book, I was like, I understand why it was so impactful to me at that age specifically, because I was like, it is very like traditional Gen X, like American values, like it's very like all of that. And That's why I think I responded to it quite differently when I was reading it today, like compared to when I was a kid. But yeah, some of my like childhood dreams were, I think, like at the, the first thing I ever wanted to be was an astronaut. Wanted to be an astronaut very badly. Wanted to be a rock star at some point. Wanted to be an illustrator for comic books. These are all things that I remember my parents being like, I don't
Try
know.
again. Yeah.
Yeah, try again. Yeah. And I remember in middle school, I wanted to be, I remember I wanted to be a philosopher. Like, I remember like coming across like, like middle school studying like world history or whatever and being like, oh, so some people just like sat around and thought about stuff. Like, that sounds great. And yeah, so those were some of my, I feel like, yeah, childhood dreams.
Yeah. Wow. And there's Rockstar's performance. There's an element of that. He talks about being an astronaut. He goes to zero G. I think at that time, my childhood dream was like I had just gotten my braces off for the first time. And I was like, I have a new smile and it's changed my life. And I want to, so for like a summer, I wanted to be an orthodontist.
That's bleak to me just because that is, I know they're doing a service to some extent, but the pain, the amount of
Yes.
pain that is inflicted, sorry, no
No,
offense.
it doesn't make sense to me either. I think because I've never leaned towards science in any way or math, and those are such science heavy career. And then I just had my top braces, and then when I got top and bottom, it was over. I was not interested in anymore. I also had, I think I had a different orthodontist the second time around, and he was terrible. He like had little money with his face printed on it. It was just a lot. It was a lot.
Interesting. Orthodontists are such a specific, like, yeah. I remember my orthodontist being a character of sorts as well.
Yeah, it's there's something so barbaric about braces.
No, of course. It's medieval in a way. Like, yeah. I had so much like orthodontic like stuff from when I was like a child onwards. Like everything you could imagine like going on in a mouth I had.
Yeah. It's interesting to revisit this in your 20s. I think, I mean, it was my first visit with it. You're already at, like I'm in my late 20s and I'm starting to think about like what are the big lessons? I'm starting to become for a while I did like a little Zoom lecture for my college about using social media and so that was odd because it was like I'm 2 years ahead of you guys. Like I don't
Yes.
really know a lot.
I'm having a really ex similar experience right now where someone, there's a group from my school that just asked if I would like come and talk to them about stuff, about something, and like if that would be their fall speaker. And I'm like, I'm 25. Like, what do
Yeah.
you, like, what could I possibly have to say? But I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. It's
Yeah.
very
Why not?
flattering.
Yeah.
Yeah, to suddenly feel like you have knowledge that other people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. This book is like 52 chapters and it reads so fast, 61. But I think like maybe we have like the first 20 chapters or so down, or at least the lived experiences. What would be some of like the headings in your last lecture, do you think? What are the things that you're like, I at least know this much?
Ooh, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I don't know anything about anything. I mean, a lot of my reaction to the book like was so different reading it at this point in life 'cause I was like I see where as a kid like a lot of these lessons as I mentioned like it's very like traditional. I honestly like rereading it, I expected that because it was so influential for me like when I was a child, I expected that rereading it I thought as an adult, more or less, it would be even more like applicable, valuable to me now than it was then. And I actually felt entirely the opposite. I just realized that at one point in my life, when I was like a middle schooler, sort of like forming my value systems, I think it was a lot more influential. I think it was like a lot more aligned with what I was being told by like my parents and by my teachers as far as like work hard, you will succeed, don't back down, like there are no obstacles that you can't overcome, ask for what you want, like
That one I definitely want to circle back to.
there's so there was some that is don't complain, like there's a lot of that. And I remember, like, I think it was so influential to me as a child because I was like addicted to achievement, like,
Yes.
and Yeah, addicted to achievement on the traditional means, like on the traditional metrics. And I was just thinking about how at 25, that is so different. Like when I was reading this book now, like a lot of what I think about it is that like the world is so different
Yeah.
today from what it was like at the time that this was written. And I mean, I think it also another thing that made me appreciate the book when I was a kid was like he's a computer scientist, and a lot of like what he's talking about are like these ways to like change variables and like iterate solutions to problems. And both my parents were like programmers, like computers, so it like made sense to me with like how I
Right.
was thinking. But I've grown up and like that's not like what that's not what I'm doing, that's not the path I'm on, and like the world looks so different. A lot of what happens in this book is like how to succeed and be validated and encouraged within these like institutions. And at this
Yeah.
point in my life, like, and at this point in the world, like, like this is like nearly 20 years post this book, like the way that like the economy and industry and institution like has revealed itself like over the last like decade or two, it makes it a lot harder for me to be like motivated or inspired by the
Yeah.
lessons in this book. I think to answer your question, in this stalling and rambling has now allowed me to find an to feel an answer to your question. I think like something, a chapter in the book would maybe for me be something I feel like is that I do feel pretty strongly about at this age, 25, like is to have your own definitions of success, like have your own definition of what success is to you, how you define it. I think knowing your own value system is so crucial, so important, and part of, me today, like knowing that, having like a definition for success and a definition and a set of things that I value makes it easy for me to even look at this book and be like, there are things, there are like values ascribed in this book that I don't share.
What are some of those values?
I don't know, like I think, for example, like we were just talking about like the play that just produced out here in LA earlier this year. I also produced like a 24-hour film festival like for my birthday, or like one of my values is being like community oriented. Like one of my values is doing things for other people, with other people, in some extent to feel some personal joy, but not necessarily for like personal ambition or like validation. I don't know. Like that's like a value that I feel like is a tricky one, like out here. And but it's like a value that I have. Like a value that I have is like, that your personal success is not more important than other people. Like that's a value that I have. I feel like a lot of my like day-to-day work is stuff like that, like having a community-oriented events that are free, like that are creative, artistic, that are not tied to like professional success, that are not like a credit, like that are not like, yeah, I don't know if that's like super coherent, but like that's something that I feel like kind of diverges from the lessons in those book, which are like have heroes and they will someday validate you, respect these institutions and they will like, and you might get to interface with them. Like he talks so much about Disney in this book, which is something that I think like, Disney is something where like they are selling imagination, but then they're selling it. And we've seen like 20 years later, like from this book now, like to me, I look at Disney as like that is a large corporation that profits off of the idea of like imagination and creativity and whatever. So that, yeah, that, I don't know. I don't know. I hope that was an answer.
Yeah, I think something that I didn't really realize until now as we're talking about it is that the book and his experience, which makes sense, he's a professor, his experience is so limited to the world of academia, which is, one of the oldest institutions, at least in this fairly young country. And I think academia, for all that it is, I think it, and I only know like very tangentially, like my mom was an adjunct for like a year or two when I was really young. It is not about community. It is sort of like, how can I get this from you to get this so I have like job security? And in the same way that you're talking about, he wants to be an Imagineer. He does like a little sabbatical at Disney. And Disney is also an institution. Like, whether you love it or hate it, it is an institution that has like a century behind it that is really strict, that, has a lot of very strict confines. You're absolutely right about he is navigating a very straightforward path. And in I think maybe just in the arts in general, compared to something a couple months ago, I saw half of the movie Daddy-O with Sean Penn and Dakota Johnson. I only saw half of it, and then the fire alarm at the Grove went off, so everyone left, and my friend and I were like, I don't need to see the rest of this. Dakota Johnson's character plays a programmer, and she says, like, most of it is pulling decisions down to, is this true or false? And I think that puts, obviously, like, to computer programmers to work within binary. And so much of everything we do is there is no path. You have to figure out the path by yourself. There are no right answers. And that for a book that talks so much about legacy, I feel like those little choices don't necessarily, like, I don't know, there's always going to be another college, which is maybe not true for everyone. But I think, like, the two of us, we have both created our own paths to get to where we are. There's a lot of thinking outside of the box. And I think, like you said, this book is like how to succeed within the lines that are already there. And you're right, it's such a Gen X thing. He only says it once, but I highlighted kids these days complain too much. They're coddled too much. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's exactly something I responded to. Like, not to be so, obvious like about it, but it is like it's a Gen X like white guy book. Like to me, I feel like it's almost like the rule book for like being a nice, respectable, successful guy. Like, yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like, it is. And yeah, there's this like sense of bliss I feel like from the book. Like, there is a lot of comfort and sort of stability and whatever that he like kind of constantly experiences, and where a lot of these lessons stuff come from. And I do think a lot of that is great. Like, there's also a lot that I do take from the book that I do really value. Like, there are things that have like stuck in my head for years. Like, the idea of like I'm remembering his chapter about like driving like dented cars. Like, that's
Yeah, of
something that
course.
I like have responded to. There's plenty in there that I do also. Like, but yeah, I mean, it's not a radical book, and it's not a radical book. And I feel like sometimes I feel like today, like the world that I feel like I'm living in requires thought and behavior that just is more radical. So I feel like that is something that I like to like bring to my work. This book to me is comforting in a way because it
Yeah.
describes a life that like for the most part has made a lot of sense, and there's some things I don't relate to as much.
I think it's comforting in that, like, this man has lived a life he is proud of and has, like, made peace with this very difficult thing and talks a lot about how hard it is on his wife, which, like, I don't know. Of course, it's hard on his wife, and I don't want to criticize that, but it also feels kind of weird just to be like, and my wife is great, and my wife is great. I think at that point in your life, it makes a lot of sense that he doesn't want to be radical, and it is deeply comforting. But I also wonder, is the majority of the audience that this book goes out to younger people or older people who are able to be like, oh, well, I did that one, or like, I already know this one, so I feel better about myself.
Even reading it, I feel like one thing that I feel so bad, like just like slandering this dude who like died of cancer,
Yeah.
like or like whatever. I work, my day job is I work at a cancer nonprofit, so I also feel like somewhat like desensitized or sensitized like to that experience, and have like dealt with a lot of loss in like my personal life. And like even the writing itself, I realized I was like, oh, actually, it's not that weird that I read this book at 10 or 11 years old, because I was reading it when I was rereading it. I was like, the writing is so simple. Like, there is nothing very complex about the book or the ideas even really in it at all, which is not the point. Like, it is, like, you're right. Like, it is kind of the audience is children. And I also wanted to come back to another that you had said about the idea of it, him being a computer scientist and there being like kind of true and false and right and wrong. And one thing I think, particularly maybe because my parents are programmers, I took some like computer science in college, and I really loved the creative element of the problem solving to it. And just the idea that when I would like work on code or whatever, just the idea that there was a solution, like there was a path, and there's like a kind of beauty in the like taking something very mechanical and using it to like create something that, works, like has like truth value to it, that like is operational. Even if anything, I think about it even with how I, any of my like artistic practices or whatever, like the writing that I do, or even like the acting, or Or even like right now, I'm writing with a friend. We're writing a video game, like an interactive fiction sort
Nice.
of thing, like the one that it like has like tree like structures and whatever, which like and it is coded into a program. And I appreciate the kind of mechanics of that system of like if this, then this. Like I think that is sort of like how a story functions, or how like a neural pathway functions. Like a lot of like, when I think about like acting work or whatever, I think a lot about like mental roads that you're like navigating. There's something to be said, I think, for the blending of like art and science and like technology and human, and the way that that exists in this book, where he's talking about like life lessons that he has gotten from this like sort of very type A like kind of approach to things. And it's interesting because on some level I do I find that interesting and applicable. Like, yes, there are no firm paths in artistic life and practice, but I know like when I'm writing something, I have like a very strong idea of like this doesn't work until this happens. Like this has to happen for this to work. Even like putting in the play and like doing it together with my like collaborators or whatever, there was a lot of like this moment here only works if this here happens. Like, and it feels so mathematical and like I don't know, even though it is something that is so artistic, and I don't know, the capacity for both sort of disciplines that is required in both and many disciplines is that stuff, I think, can really fascinate me.
Yeah, you had mentioned there's a sort of like bliss and comfort to it. And I think there is such a comfort in reading it because there are solutions. And he is sort of sitting down and being like, he's not claiming to have all the answers, but here are all of my answers. And I think it's also like he never pretends to be something he's not, but there are parts. The next thing I have pulled up is Chapter 4, The Parent Lottery. I won the parent lottery. I was born with the winning ticket, a major reason I was able to live out my childhood dreams. And I was like, great, I was born and then immediately, because due to a medical mishap, disabled my mother and now she can't walk right. So like, not a winning ticket, not relatable, Randy. But I also think, like, is this a man who just, like, the first hardship he has is cancer? Like, I just,
That's a
that can't be
great
right.
question. That's a great question. That's a great question. I mean, me and my, that is something that I wonder a lot about in terms of like, when you're talking about privilege or, yeah, like, lived experiences. Like, that is something that I always wonder about. Like, I think that, me and my friends, like, whenever we're like, just gossiping or talking about, a lot of times, like, a lot of what is invoked is like, what is like a person's circumstance and like, and how much do, if you're a person who maybe hasn't necessarily encountered much hardship like during your life, in what way will minor slights feel like oppression or hardship? And like, not to say like that, as it relates to this book, but some of those ideas I do think find their way into some of the like, ask for what you want, like work hard and you will get what you achieve. There's one particular line actually that your line reminded me of that I have dog-eared. Okay, there's a line in this book that just always makes me that has made me chuckle. My favorite non-complainer of all time may be Jackie Robinson, the first African American to play Major League Baseball. He endured racism that many young people today couldn't even fathom. He knew he had to play better than the white guys, and he knew he had to work harder. So that's what he did. He vowed not to complain, even if fans spit on him. The line, he endured racism that many young people today couldn't even fathom. That line
Like, oh, buddy.
makes me, it gets my mind going. Endured racism that many young people today couldn't even fathom.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
I do think that's hilarious that I did laugh out loud at that. It reminded me of the woman who was went viral a couple years ago for saying, like, I don't try to be relatable. She was talking about like the Hispanic woman who cleans her toilets, and she's like, I look up to people like Harriet Tubman. And it's just like you can't just
It's
toss
like
that in and say like you've done it.
kids these days can't even handle a little bit of racism. Like,
Ugh.
obviously, that's not what he's saying, but like, it's just kind of funny to me. Like, he endured racism that kids today couldn't even fathom. I don't know. That's just something about that, like, really just tickles me.
Yeah, it's also just like, Randy, that's not for you to decide, you know? And also, like, I'm sure Jackie Robinson did complain. You know what?
And Jackie Robinson should be able to complain. Like, complaints are
Getting spit
fine.
on?
Yeah, like, yeah, like that's yeah, one of those things where I say like, yeah, like, the book is not that radical. To complain can be radical. Like, what it,
It is like, well, was was
I know, it's like there's the idea of like accept your lot, work hard, like, you know, and achieve your goals because they are achievable because there is a whole system that is designed for your success. And if you fall, if you are polite and courteous and, you know, have a good reputation and are tenacious, like you will be able to achieve your goals. And I think when I was a child, like, and I read that, I was like, oh yeah, I can achieve whatever I want to achieve. And I did that, like, you know, for a very long time. And I still love, you know, doing things, like, obviously, like, I still like, you know, having a goal, accomplishing and whatever. But I feel like I'm a lot more, I think I spend a lot more time thinking about and, like, evaluating, like, whose belief system is this? And achievement to what end? And achievement for what and for who? Like, what are my dreams? And do my dreams, am I the only beneficiary of those dreams? Like, are there other better dreams, like, you know, that can do more for more people? Like, I don't know. Like, that is, it's something I wonder about. Like, I feel like we live in a society that is all about, like, personal accomplishment. Like, it's like, what will you realize and you achieve for yourself? And I feel like the overall impact of that is, like, you know, you have so many relationships with people whose, like, personal narratives, like, and, like, personal goals and the stakes for their own lives, like, are so high. And yeah, and I just don't know how much that idea of, like, you know, personal dreams and, like, personal achievement or whatever, I just always, like, a thing I always wonder is, like, but what does it do for other people? Like, what does it do for, like, the other people that you know, like, your community? Like, how does it, we're all just so much more interconnected than that. And there are tons of books like it, you know, like, that have this idea of, like, how do you achieve what you want to achieve? Like, and it's just something I wonder about sometimes where I'm like, I just don't know how much more Americans need to think about personal achievement, like, individual accomplishment, like,
Randy talks about a few people that he like took along the way that he like helped advance. It was cool that he talked about Alice, which is this animation software, because I went to art school. Everybody and their brother in the animation department, which was the largest department, was using Alice for free every day. And like that's a huge impact. But I do think like there's just something a little hollow about it, I think. And maybe it's I think you said earlier, like none of the ideas feel like I haven't heard them before.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the last chapters, he's talking about, because it just felt so applicable to our industry, is he's talking about he needs other people to like read a dissertation he wrote. So he gives someone the dissertation with a box of Thin Mints, which I'm a Girl Scout, we love it. And he'll say, like, you can't eat the cookies until you read the thing. So you also get a little reward. There's a way to like nudge them along, is to be like, have you read that? Have you eaten the Thin Mints yet? And I immediately was like, yes, perfect. I need to do this. I'm sending out a script right now to like 20 different people. Perfect, perfect. But it's also like, that feels like manipulation a lot. Like, it is, like you said, like, how do I get what I want? And I think that, like if I were to give a last lecture, I think one of the things that to me has been so much more helpful, and I feel like adjacent to what Randy says, is focus on the things you can control. I feel bad saying like he never experienced hardship. I know he talks about like he didn't get into like the doctoral program or something he wants.
Okay,
So
that's not
yeah,
something
so
I like.
he like does go to someone and is just like, please, and gets it, but it's sort of like they're
There's a lot that he describes. I just feel like it's not reflective of the world that we live in today. Like, I was thinking about, like, there was something he was talking about of where he wanted this thing from Disney, or he, like, just basically calls up this company and is like, gets on the phone with someone who can make something happen. I was like, if I try to call my grocery store because I think, like, forgot something there, I'm like on hold for 2 hours and they never pick it up. Like, there's just some things where I feel like we live in a world that looks way different. One of the things is that it also looks a lot more technological than, like, he's describing. Like, he is describing a world that is honestly more human. Like, when he talks about the cell phone, he's like, can you even imagine that one day we'd be walking around with our little phones in our pocket? Isn't, like, the world of technology so beautiful? And isn't there so much benefit that will come from this work? Like, we're gonna make the world a better place. Then, on, like, in the end of the book, He mentions how he never had a TV because he's like, he thinks of it as a big time waster, but he realized that when he's bedridden with cancer, like he's gonna be watching a lot of TV. So his wife, like, gets him a TV. And he says that he didn't have a TV because he thinks it wastes time. I was like, if he could even see the way in which the cell phone, what that has become as far as like a time waster or something. Talk about like Alice or something, be like computer, the technology. I think there's so much optimism in this book for like the world of the future and creating like the technology of the future. And I right now, like sitting in like 2024, like am oftentimes wondering, like, is there any good that comes from technological development anymore? Is there anything besides attention economy and like double digit screen time hours and like infrastructure for like bombs and like military, like what is, obviously there's like medical like advancement technology, there are good things, but I don't know. It's like in this day and age, like in 2024, I look at that so differently.
If I have the dates right, I think 2008 might have been the year of the first iPhone. So what a world. And I think also like 2008, barely remembering that year, it was such an optimistic time. It was like perhaps the most optimistic we have been as a country in a long time. I think talking about time wasted, I think absolutely feeds into the whole book, feeds into this productivity hill that we have as a culture that I'm trying to let go of. And I think like, is time wasted if it's like spent relaxing, if it's spent like doing something you love that is not going to be a final product? And I think something that I like, the ask for what you want and you'll get it. I've heard so many times and it never feels right. And I haven't been able to put my finger on why that piece of advice doesn't feel right. And I think maybe the reason I've come up with is you get one chance to ask. And that's the thing, like I have really big industry connects who like I know like me, but I've known them for like 5 years and I haven't asked them to read anything because you get one chance. So it's like I
That's
just
entirely correct. Like I feel like, even in this, like, the process of like doing this play or like, and just, being in LA, being in this industry, like whatever, people will act like that. But like, ask for what you want. It's like your achievement matters. Realizing your personal dreams, that matters. All else be damned. And the thing that I was, even as we were thinking about, inviting people to this play, like asking for this, asking for that, like doing all this stuff to make it happen, it had become so easy to see when someone is like moving in a way that is transactional. And I think there is something really to be said for goodwill and like developing goodwill and like spending that goodwill appropriately. And there was a lot of times I feel like that sort of like thing of like ask for what you want, like take whatever. There's a lot of times I feel like that sort of way of moving is not at all attached with like, but what is the like human goodwill that you have with people? How strong is your relationship? There were so many things that we didn't do in the production of like this play or that I haven't done in a lot of my work because it's like I have a understanding of how much goodwill I have with people and like how to use that appropriately. Not to say that like he doesn't understand that either, but I feel you on that. And I think that's a like salient point. Some of this stuff is less human. Like it's less involved with like a genuine understanding of what makes people want to do things for other people. Like with a strong relationship or connection, do you even have to send a box of Thin Mints along? Like
No, I fully feel that because, like, I just finished this draft. I'm lucky enough I had like 20 people who said they would read it and are genuinely excited to read it because we are friends and because we have that dynamic. I went to college and we had two like big film festivals and we had so much training as students, like by the faculty of like what to do and what not to do, how to make a good impression, how to talk to people at parties and all of this. But one of the biggest things was like everyone knows you want a job. Like everyone knows you want something.
Yes.
So you have to try to make a personal connection. You have to like that comes later. You have to build something personal that this person like genuinely wants to work with you. And at one point, my junior year maybe, there was this panel and we were having a discussion that was like just the writing kids and one of the creators of Friends, like huge industry person. And the event ends and everyone's sort of milling about and this girl goes up to one of the creators of Friends and says, "Can I have a job?" And it works. And it works. It just It's so rare that that happens. It
For
and
sure.
I think it's because like that person has had the friend's success. That person is no longer like looking over their back to see when the checks will stop clearing.
I remember when I was in college also, and I was like coming out to LA for a summer to work at some production company. I would go to some like college, like networking, like whatever stuff, and I would put myself out there and just do that thing. Like, and I was in like this entrepreneurship class in like my senior year of college, and it was a similar sort of thing. We'd bring in speakers, and sometimes I would like hit them up and be like, hey, can we like get coffee? The thing I realized though, I think at one point, is like when it comes to just plain old like networking, whatever stuff. The thing that it maybe gets you, or that connection that you have, I find is not that valuable. Like just moving around in like Hollywood, you'll end up with like some like contacts in your phone that are like a big name here or there, like whatever. But how much is that person really going to like stick their neck out for you? If you don't truly connect, I don't feel like that stuff goes so far. Even like, you know, working as a PA on a big set, that is great. But in a couple months, like we all know how stuff is here. Like, you know, you do like stuff, and it's I think it's important, like what you were saying, like in terms of being a person who people want to work with, like just developing that those genuine connections. Like I more so believe in like doing your own work and doing work that you really love and that is really good to the extent that like the work does it for you. Like work is so good that like it brings people into your orbit and people connect with you more because of like also like as like an artist or something, I feel like your the relationship between like yourself and your work is so, for me, it's so strong. It's like intertwined. And these flimsy connections have never really done so much for me, so much as like the connections that are strong, that are really based on like the work and like what you do and who responds to it. And having that genuine value in your relationship with someone based on like the work that you're doing. I always think that'll get you farther than any of the like flimsy connections based on status or, yeah.
Yeah, like you said, some of the biggest people, like stars whose names I have in my phone, have worked on so many projects and so many shows to the point where like they don't answer their phone anymore. And that's okay because they're living in a different stage of life. I think one of the most valuable pieces of information I got was with those festivals at my college. It was never explicitly said, but the understanding was like your career will be made in one conversation tonight. It is like life and death. And the most valuable piece I ever got out of that was like network across. It won't be valuable for like 30 years, but those are the people that you bring with you. Like things take so much time. And just the nature of the book, like that's a guy who's lived through all of it and knows that it is ending and like n really knows the breadth of time that he gets and we don't. But I think like at least in what we do, everything is so slow. Everything I'm hearing this year, and it's like it's a rough year, but everything I'm hearing is like it just takes time.
And in the meantime, like, I'm like, something that always blows my mind out here is I feel like so many people I know are always talking about our careers, like everything we want, like all the ways to eventually do what we want. And the thing that confounds me is I'm like, I know so much about what people want, but I know so little about what they do. Like, I know so little about the work that they make and that they love and that they like, you know, whatever. I'm like, yeah, things take a long, 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 long time for sure. And I feel so blessed that we have all this space and room and time to do exactly what we want in like big grand ways. Like two of the most like rewarding, fulfilling like experiences I've had in this last year have been like when I produced my 24-hour film festival and when I and like this play that I just produced. I spent money on both of those things. For the play, I feel like the really amazing, awesome thing about that was we didn't charge for tickets, but we made up all of the costs and donations. Like people, like we had, you know, just like donation link or whatever. We offset all of our costs, but we're donating half of that money to Palestine. And like, that's awesome. Like, that was like, yeah, there was a cost to that or whatever. But I'm like, in this time where we like have all of the space to like make whatever we want, and like, there's just so much room to like put the things into the world that you do want to see. Yeah. And to get to make stuff. And I feel like that, like, I mean, two other things, these are like related to the book are. And related to your point, like, is that so many of the chapters happen in the later stage of his life? Like, he talks about his childhood and he talks about his adulthood, but there's honestly not a lot about, like, specifically these years.
There's definitely like a recency bias,
Yeah.
certainly.
Part of what it makes me think about is exactly what you're saying of, like, a lot of stuff doesn't happen until later. Like a lot of what he's describing as his most meaningful moments are things that happened much older than I am right now, which is so surprising because every day I am alive feels so meaningful.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. Your 20s feel like a sort of a, I can't think of the word, like a gaping hole in this book. And the first thing I think of when I realize that is like, yeah, because he was in college all that time. Like, he
Yeah,
was,
true.
how many degrees does this man have? Like, those years certainly weren't wasted, but they were certainly spent in a very structured
Yeah, it's
way.
interesting that he doesn't talk about that because I mean, I have so many friends who are in like PhD programs or grad school or like whatever. It's interesting that he doesn't talk about those years much. It's like so offhand. Like he talks mostly about his life after the PhD. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I think maybe the only real story or anecdote I can remember from that is meeting his wife. And I think that's near the end.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And then the other thing I was thinking about was just like you were talking about the way that he gets to go out, kind of. Like, I'm like,
Cinematic.
yes, cinematic. And I'm even just thinking about like from like an artistic perspective or whatever, the idea of being given like that finite time
He
and like,
knows he's gonna die.
yes, and like you get to choose how to spend it. And it is a horrifying way to go out. Like, there's, I've seen like cancer up close and like in the later stages, like it's devastating. But yeah, like, but just that opportunity to get to really like package things up, I think is that's quite a blessing. And he also, there's something to be said. I think the part of it that maybe resonates the most is like most in the positive way. I'm doing my best to like balance out the like shit talking with like also some of the appreciation I have for, there's a lot of perspective in the book that I think is really useful. Like the idea of having a few months to live and like how do you spend your time? What do you worry about versus not worry about? Like that all I feel very strongly about. Like just that, like in any given moment, even when we're as young as we are, like the time that you spend is precious and valuable. And how much do you spend complaining about a situation versus like making the best of it, making the most meaningful experience out of it? Like I think that is salient and is something that I definitely like carried on through my life in some way or another.
I think a big value of the book is to make you reflect on your life, to make you sort of think about what are the things that really matter to me. And I think I'm noticing, like, I don't love the don't complain part, but I understand the nuggets. I understand the value there, and maybe I would change it to something like focus on the things you can control. Because even saying like don't complain is a negative. It is sort of just saying like don't do this. But I think like one of the big things that it's making me think about is a phrase that my boyfriend introduced to me, which is don't save the candles, which is if you are like always have a special like birthday candle or whatever, and you never ever use it, then what's the point? You have to use it now. And I think you were talking about like those really enriching experiences, and this ties into the don't complain thing is like if you want beautiful things in your life, you have to make them happen. And that's, I think, so it is in the heart of the book, but not explicit. When I was thinking about what's in my last lecture, mostly it's like the stocks are not impossible to understand, and like never carry a balance on a credit card. And that's kind of it. But it's those things. And like there's like, I think, a Maya Angelou quote of like, don't set yourself on fire to keep someone else warm. It's those things, but it's also just like, listen to yourself. I think I'm still learning what those childhood dreams are almost.
Yeah, there's one thing in terms of the don't complain, I would say like maybe don't complain that much in public because complaining might make people like you less. Like that is real. As much as
Absolutely.
complaints are valid, a lot of people don't like to hear them. I feel this way sometimes. Like, sometimes even just the experience of being around negativity, even valid negativity, a lot of people just don't want to engage with it because it's hard to hear a valid complaint. Sometimes is hard because you're like, or like I feel somewhat sometimes, or like to hear a valid complaint is like, I know the complaint is valid. It makes me so sad or upset to know that something is sad or upsetting. I wish I didn't. There's so many little amendments I would maybe like, make, but that's a, I guess like we all have the power to do exactly what this guy did, which is just to like think about all of our own like rules for living. And I'm sure we have so much, and I am very interested to think like if I was as old as he was, what would be the experiences that like gave me the sort of fulcrum moment. Yeah, just so interesting because if I think about any of the big things from like my last year, it would be like start working on the set pieces earlier, like
Yeah, it's these little aphorisms, like you said that, and it makes me think of like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the second best time is to plant it today. I'm also trying to think about like what would be part of my parents' last lecture. Like my dad's about to turn 70 and retire from his job, and some of the like the most concrete statements that I know, my dad is an architect, and every once in a while he'll come home from work and be like, "Don't be an architect, Aaron." When I think of my dad, I think a lot of like deferred dreams, which is why I know he like I have always wanted to be a writer, and he has always been supportive of that, which is great. But I think you were talking about sort of what are your dreams when you're a kid, and they're all very career oriented, which I think is also like a structure of sort of the system of how we talk about stuff. But like, I remember you saying, like, let's think of a more like reasonable, helpful, financially profitable
Yeah,
dream.
that was a big part of how I was
Yeah.
raised for sure.
Did Randy get to dream a little bit more? I mean, Randy, because he was at camp, he did not technically get to see Man Walk on the Moon as it happened. But like that,
He was
yeah.
at camp. Like that was
Yeah.
something that like I remember thinking in that moment when I read that chapter is I was like, I was not going to camp. Like
But it is like his generation, my dad, exactly the same. My dad wanted to be an astronaut because he saw Man Walk on the Moon. And it's like, God, was our equivalent 9/11? Like, what was that like huge moment? You know, and I feel like the closest thing we got is the Obama administration. And then like, look where that ended up.
Yeah, like I think there's this promise of like hope and security and stuff in achievement. Like I know like my parents were immigrants in the 90s and definitely started with nothing here. And I know that when I was a kid, like a lot of they would offer edits to a lot
Yeah.
of the like dreams that I had, like based on their anxiety, their financial anxiety, like you know, their anxiety about the world and stuff. They weren't necessarily parents who were saying, like, be anything you want to be or whatever
Yeah.
until later in life. But yeah, a lot of it did come from that place. There's a lot of security in institutions, in these like kind of definitive career paths, like safe options, like whatever. There is a lot of like again, like we talked about the like bliss and comfort in this book, like a lot of it comes from exactly that sort of place, which is totally valid. But I think about, you know, you're talking about like the Obama administration or something. Yeah, like I think about that so much. Like, you know, when I watch something like the like DNC like today or whatever, like there is so much comfort in this idea of like come in here and achieve with us and accomplish with us and you will be safe and you will be taken care of and you'll be like a part of like the fold of society. And it's a lot less comfortable to like be on the margins in some way or another. But
I think about maybe was the greatest moment of hope we had, like the morning of the 2016 election, and then how quickly and how severely that came down. I think the thing that lacks in this book is he has this mentality of like everything is possible. And I think women, people of color, queer people, I think like we all know there's an asterisk on that from the very beginning. As soon as we start understanding things, it's like everything is possible except for me, like except getting treated fairly in a workplace and making an equitable amount of money. And everything is possible if you wear a bra and wear the right kind of clothes and dress up in the right, like there's, and it's just really hard to tell people that their basic conception of the world is inaccurate to your basic experience of the world.
And obviously we can like understand the book for what it is, and then there's sometimes it is I really like understand and like relate to that feeling of like engaging with a book like this and being like, well, the world isn't the same. There are obstacles or whatever. But then sometimes I'm also like knowing though, like when I read this book again, like when I was saying earlier how I felt like rereading this, I'm like, oh yeah, this is kind of just like the rule book to being like a nice white guy. And so there's like to some extent where I'm like, if this is really all it is, it's funny to me to remember like sort of that. Maybe it's possible that even the like if everything was equitable, like is this all you would have to have in your head? Like it's just, oh yeah, be nice, do your work, like be like, you know, considerate towards other people. Like here's some like hacks to like get off of phone calls or like whatever. And yeah, sometimes it is nice kind of to remember like that plus all of the other little like rules that you need to even like be able to see the world that way, that sometimes it's nice to know that like if this is the simplest it is, that at least is totally understandable.
I'm starting to have a very dark thought, which is not fair to Randy, but was the most special thing about Randy the way he died? I'm thinking about
Oof.
t like tall poppy syndrome. You know, the people who stand out the most are the ones who get cut down the first. The people who make
Wow.
themselves, you know, the tallest poppy is the one that stands out. So I definitely am going to cut that one first. So at any point, was Randy really, really trying to make himself different?
I wonder because there like a little thread in this book. I also think it's so funny because I just do not think this book like was meant to be analyzed in this way.
No,
But
no,
I'm
no.
so, you know, and
No, it's like an
I'm so
airplane book.
happy.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like so happy that it is though. Like something I wonder about is all of the people who he references, like that all of his friends have like poked fun at him for the way that he is like painted himself or the way he's painted in this lecture. And I think like it's really interesting to note that it is a lecture written by him about his life, about his character. Like I don't know him. I don't know if there's an element of like revisionism or like whatever there, but he does discuss the shit that he gets like from other people about the character that he portrays in the book. And I wonder about the like selection bias of these like moments and stories. He also talks about like being like perceived as a jerk, like, and I was just thinking about like, yeah, like this like computer nerd who thought he was smarter than other people. I can see for a huge portion of these life experiences, I can see, you know, I'm curious for sure if there is some element to painting himself in a certain light, like, you know, for the purposes of this book and you know, with the like maybe lens that like a terminal illness gives you.
In those sections you're talking about when his friends are making fun of him, he gets called Saint Randy, which is like, okay, but you also put it in the book. Like you're poking fun of yourself, but you're also claiming it a little bit by putting it in the book. I think like, was his greatest goal really to just be good at this path? One of the highlights I have pulled up is have something to bring to the table because that will make you more welcome, which is like I think it in terms of productivity, it's like, do I have to be productive in order to be valuable, or am I valuable for the fact of existing?
Yeah, like it's like that's another quote where it's like to me, I would think like come to the table and be ready to be a good listener. Like you know, that might be my personal thing. If like what's in my head, like I think there's a lot of people who I feel like come to the table, have something to offer. I personally feel like sometimes the thing that helps me like with a social interaction or with a like a business thing or something is come prepared to listen to people. And like sometimes the best thing you can be in a room is a good listener. Like
And it's so hard to be a good listener when the voice in the back of your head is, what am I getting out of this? And how
yeah,
am I
exactly.
advancing myself?
Yeah, and I think it's funny because I do feel like that's a little bit of a generational like thing also. Like, you know, like at one point success for a certain generation was like, you know, moving like industry moving. Also maybe what kind of attitudes allow you to be in a social strata such that you can have a book published. Like then you like you are a professor. Like I don't know, like you know, there yeah, like more radical ways of thinking and being, like things that are maybe less self-serving, maybe less. Maybe it was much harder to be that kind of individual and like to get to lecture to a group of people. Like, and he talks about it in the beginning, like he talks about like the self-importance and gravitas that like made him want to do this lecture, like do this book. Like, I can't pretend not to relate to that. Like, I have a Substack newsletter. And in that, like, I get to write about my own life and paint it however way I so choose. And it is one of those things that I am like constantly wondering about as I like write, like, you know, how am I portraying myself? Like, is this honest? Like would the people in my life like back this up, this portrayal? I think maybe a part of from reading this book, like at a young age and having those questions, like the thing it always makes me think of that, about that is like it matters how you treat people and how you engage with other people such that if you were to sit down to write about your own life, that's always the thing that like whenever I wonder like am I characterizing myself honestly? Like, is this accurate? I also wonder something that alleviates that is trying to go through my life and be mostly pretty cognizant of like how I engage with other people such that like I can do that sort of work from more of a place of confidence. I don't know.
That's true. I found myself wishing that we got to hear from Jay, his wife, and that we got to hear from other people and how they responded to this and their perspective. I think the, and maybe I've had moments like this, so I can't speak to this, but they're like, you mentioned that he has to be told that he's a jerk sometimes, or that he's perceived as a jerk. And maybe this is like a identity question. Like, have either of us gotten the ability to not have that situational awareness, to like not, because Randy could be a jerk and still succeed. The same chapter as have something to bring to the table. The very last sentence is, if you can find an opening, you can probably find a way to float through it. And I think the word float is the thing really getting my gourd, because you like,
Yeah,
I think for so many
absolutely.
people, it's like fight and crawl and
I know,
drag.
literally. Yeah, I think about that even, in regards to if I think about my own experience in like entertainment or something specifically, I'm like, yeah, like, I feel great about like the stuff I've been able to do in the last like couple years and stuff, but I'm like, yeah, the idea of floating, I'm like, it's not been floating. Like any of the work that I've been involved with recently, it's been like I know that nobody is handing me anything. Like there's been no floating involved. It's there's been a lot of great things I'm very grateful for. Yes, it has been clawing and building.
I sort of floated into acting because I was crawling and dragging my way through writing. Like I got the my first acting gig because I was found through Twitter. And I often say like, oh, I got so lucky, you know, this is out of this world, which is true. I was also posting a video every single day on TikTok or on Twitter for 2 years, every
Exactly.
single day.
That's how I got my management as well, like that sort of thing. But
Exactly. It's imagine floating in. You know, there are sometimes you can go viral once and suddenly get invited to insane places, or you can have, you know, seven viral videos and still really be trying to get seen.
yeah, and I think in our industry, obviously that's changed so much in just like the last like decade. And it's funny because it's like, I feel like I was gonna say it might not be easy for anybody, but like just what you're playing with, like where what the how big those openings are to float through is definitely a thing. Like, is life easy for anybody? No, of course not. Like, his life is hard. Like in this book, it is hard. Like life is hard. Like life is a challenging sort of thing. But then it's like, then when you do think about like what he describes of like, but specifically life as you pass through institutions, like institutions are something different. Yeah, and I do think that yeah, I respond similarly to those points and stuff. But yeah, like with the idea of like entertainment, like pulling in, like it's funny because you can never really predict like what the landscape is now is completely different from what it was like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, like whatever. And yeah, that's part of why, like, when you have this book, which is all like all full of all this advice, like really like well-meaning, like kindly worded, like advice for like how to go about getting what you want. Like it's interesting because I just sort of feel like, in this sort of landscape where you never know how to get what you want, like that's where I'm like. And you're also getting me fresh off of like having like stay up like this weekend, but like that's where I'm like I feel so much more like do what you love, like do things for other people, like do things to show and bring to other people, like that is doing what you love. That's how I felt like as far as in the last month or whatever it's been, like it's felt less like I'm like oh I'd like to be an actor someday. It's more like I'm an actor right now. I'm acting like.
I wonder how I will view this book. I'm 26 at like 42 or 52. And to keep going like that, I'm very glad to have read it and to know that it exists. I had no idea that this existed.
It's like really popular amongst a certain demographic. Like, I think a lot of like dads know it.
Think and Get Rich, I don't know, seven effective
Sure.
strategies.
It's like a little more like
Wholesome
it's,
and
yes, a little more
kind.
wholesome than that. I agree, but I think but that's because I feel like I do think like with like late stage, there's been a like shift in the kind of the book and the kind of mentality. I think it's a little bit more like cracked and neurotic like now when it comes to achievement and whatever, but this is definitely that book of like 20 years ago when brains were a little smoother, maybe, and like, you know, just a little bit more. Like, I think that life was a little more idyllic or closer to, not saying like, you know, 2008, obviously a horrible financial situation and et cetera. But you're right, like Obama era optimism, that sort of 90s like sitcom Full House, like sort of, yeah, it's that book. It's like of that era. Like, I do think it's like not necessarily a book that a lot of people in our like age bracket would be aware of at all. Like, again, it's a book that like I had to like pull out of like the back seat of a car,
Of
like
your uncle's car, which is
exactly. Like,
hilarious.
I think that is where it is in households across America.
It makes more sense that your uncle had it than you did, certainly. Certainly. Well, is there anything about it that we have not covered that you know you wanted to touch on?
When I was reading it again, I was like so excited to discuss it. Like, I started taking notes.
Because there are some things that he says that I'm 100% behind. He
Yeah, of
says
course.
filing everything in alphabetical order, 100%. That is like, Randy, that, whew.
There's a ton of great little pieces in there. One thing that I wrote that I don't think I've covered is that I thought would be, I read a lot of it. Have you seen the Before trilogy?
I've seen the first one.
Yes, yeah. I was thinking of, okay, great. I was thinking about how much he reminded me of Jesse in that book. Like, as I was reading it, the idea of this like white guy like floating through life and like denoting all of his like philosophies for like existence, for like a life that has overall been very chill and normal. But like some chapters, I think, as I was reading, where I was just like reading it in like that voice from like that character from that movie, where I was like, you know, this guy who like has all the wisdom in the world to offer, which again, I can't really critique, given that like when I was in middle school, I wanted to grow up to be a philosopher. But
Ethan Hawke in Before Sunrise did just read this book. Yeah, it
yes,
is in
yes.
his little backpack.
Yes, definitely, 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 definitely. Yeah.
Something I really loved about Randy, which he talks about, don't obsess over what people think. And I think Randy is not the right person to convey this because I love what he's saying. But at the same time, he says, you don't ever have to worry about what I'm thinking, good or bad. I'll let you know what's in my head. And it's like, God bless you, Randy. I wish I knew you. I wish more people were like you, but that simply is not the case.
Yeah, I like that section also. Like, or I was thinking about that. Like, that is a section that I have found is kind of evergreen, because I feel like people do really worry about a lot about what people think. And I really value being pretty explicit, like with whatever's in my head. And I have a lot of friends who I feel like are really similar. So.
There's little things that I'm going through at this point. I really like that I'm not going to be a parent. I'm never going to be a parent. But he t says that parents talk about giving children self-esteem, and it's not something you can give. It's something you have to build. That blew
I mean,
me.
that's interesting, because I do agree with, like, I have a lot of thoughts about self-esteem, like in general. And I do think, yeah, self-esteem is something that has to be built or whatever. I have absolutely no idea about what he's talking about in terms of from the parenting perspective. Like, I know so many people with self-esteem issues that will draw direct lines to my parents were critical. Like, I'm really curious about self-esteem being like negatively developed through like positive experiences with parents. I don't know. Like, that's something where I don't know anything about parenting, though. Like, I have no idea, but that was definitely one of those things where I'm like,
I don't exactly know how to talk, how to express this thought, but it's like, stop spending time on reverse psychology and just straight up psychology me of like, maybe if you just tell me I did a good job, then I will believe you that I did a good job. I think so many of the kids that get described as coddled are now growing up and have the ability to talk back. And we're saying like, no, I was really unhappy, actually. I like living on the other side of that. It's just, I wish I had more self-esteem built up.
because, yeah, like a lot of self-esteem, I feel like, has to do with narratives in your head. Like a narrative like, I'm not good enough, I will never be good enough, the work I do is not good enough. Like, and I'm just thinking about, like, yeah, like where would those narratives come from? Like, and he's talking about, like, oh, don't give your child too much praise, they need to work to develop their self-esteem. I have no idea how he raises the kids or how he was raised, but like, yeah, something about there like just makes me wonder if that's like, I don't know if Randy necessarily had the self-esteem figured out. in regards to like the raising of kids or anything. I mean, his kids also were young, like he didn't.
It's a hurtful thing to say from me to Randy. I think all of his parenting advice, and maybe it is there and I just didn't clock it, should have like an asterisk of like, I've only done this for so many years. I think something that like my dad used to say to me that was both helpful and annoying, I'm an only child, my dad would say like, this is our first time doing this too. And I think to a degree, it's helpful to know that your parents are people. It's also hurtful in the moment to be like, but you're supposed to know how to do this. Like, it's you in this relationship, in this dynamic, you are supposed to have the answers for me. But I think it's
I
also
know
like, when
it's
do you get to, when does that era switch?
I know it's interesting. Yes, it's interesting because I've heard that specific advice, like, or that specific phrase of like it's your parents' first time doing this to you. I have also heard that in a positive light, and it is one of those things that's made me it's one of those things that has like led to like developing for but that forgiveness like for but that's exactly the sort of thing. It's like hard to say anything cut and dry when it comes to like the raising like the developing of a young mind and voice. If anyone has figured that out, like I'm definitely curious because we're humans, like don't know
Which
anything.
again is like, I would love, and maybe they're gonna pull this out soon in like 2028. I would love like a new printing of this book with like a little essay by each of his three children because it is a letter to them.
I had that thought too. Like I wonder about like what their lives like being handed this book or that this lecture from their parents and from their dad, and I wonder.
So I think on the whole, the broadest stroke, what was it like revisiting it? How do you feel having come off that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I feel good. It makes me somewhat feel like this way that I felt in this like part of life where I kind of feel like I have mostly sort of handled and processed a lot of my like childhood and early adolescent like complexes and like whatever. And I feel like I'm kind of lately I felt like I'm really like on a road to a great like adult life that I'm really like happy and satisfied with. Revisiting this book really made me realize like I am a fundamentally different person than I was when I was like 10 or 11, and one who doesn't really need like this guy's memoir or someone else's memoir so much as I feel like I have my own sort of experiences that have been important and valuable, my own values and lessons that I live by myself. And yeah, I feel good having read it as I like as an adult, which was kind of my goal in choosing the book. And yeah, if anything, I feel really hopeful about life and stuff, kind of feeling this sort of absurd sense of possibility, given that what was my rule book maybe when I was like 10, 11, 12 is no longer applicable. Makes me feel a lot of possibility.
It's that you have your own rule book, which I think is the whole point of growing up. I think the book certainly did its job when it got to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure like it's influenced me in tons of subliminal like whatever sort of way. So I do have gratitude for it, even if I have like a critical lens on Randy today, which I'm gonna knock on wood that I haven't, that hasn't been like any sort of like that there's no sort of spiritual like consequence to having, but whatever, like he's a professor, like
And it's certainly, I mean, this book's been out for 16 years. We can't be the first ones to have something to say. It just feels a little rosy, and I think that's its job and what it should do.
yeah, exactly.
Would you consider it required reading?
I'm gonna say no.
I
I'm
agree
gonna
with
say
you.
no. Maybe like maybe 16 years ago, but not in the world that we live in today, where cell phones have become monsters and Disney is a monopoly. Like, I just don't know if today the book is applicable, in the same way.
I think I like the concept of a last lecture. And I
Yeah.
think like a couple of weeks ago, I was at my parents' house, the house I grew up in, and I was looking through a lot of my grandpa's stuff. He passed like a decade ago, but no one ever went through his boxes. And so I think it's like I would want a last lecture from him or all of my grandparents, It's a nice
Yeah.
idea, but in terms of the actual contents, I feel like maybe you would get more out of it watching like the lecture itself.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's an element of it that I do find beautiful, like in terms of when faced with mortality, like what do you want to share? And I think that those are moments that, we can all be grateful for if we do get to have that sort of relationship with someone in our life who is passing or and I think like, the what you can receive like from the experience of someone who is nearing death or something is so valuable and so beautiful. And I all wish that we could like that we could really like squeeze every last drop from like the people that we love before they leave us. And with some of the people in my life who have passed away, I've really, really, really tried to do that. And I think that this book is possibly a great inspiration and influence towards that.
Yeah, it feels so personal. There's a degree of like, this should be just for his kids, I think, that I felt. But I'm so glad it exists. Yeah. But not
Yeah, absolutely.
required for me. Yeah.
Yeah, not required. Not required at all.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out?
Not really, not really. I'm kind of finished with most of my like things for the year. I feel like I have a bunch of little projects coming up a little bit. I'll send you that interactive fiction thing when I'm done writing it, but I feel like mostly I'll just plug taking a walk outside and going to the park
Oof. Hell yeah.
and eating some nutritious food.
Good. Yeah. Let's end it there. I'm going to press the stop button.
Hell yeah.
Hello. Post-show recap. I'm like really proud of this one. Thank you so much, Rishi. This, I don't know, I feel a special way about it. If you want to support the podcast, please go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. The next book, scheduling, it's a crazy time of year. It might be 13 Reasons Why. It might be Mercy Watson Goes for a Ride. And you know what? Let's just throw it in there. It might be Wuthering Heights. That's what's going on in the universe of this podcast. I'm Erin Bowles. Thank you for joining. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. And I asked you to keep your fingers crossed for me last week. Please do that again. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye.